So we obviously have to welcome people. This is our new program from OnlyMX, which is a nonprofit organization. I do not have a name for this program yet. This is our first. I'm Dan Taller. This is Saul Feinfeld. We should have a few attendees coming in soon. And in the future, anybody who would like to attend the program, and even if they would like to be a presenter, you have the ability to type questions in as a guest. Nobody can see you but us. You have the ability to have your microphone activated. Only I can do that. And you can present a question if you'd like, or a response. And if you would have no reservations about having your face on camera, you can have your camera as well. We're going to keep that to a minimum because we would really like to focus on having a back and forth between all the audience and the presenters. We should have a few attendees coming in. I think that they're starting to log in. At some point, if we come up with a full title for this program or anything, we're going to try to make this, I don't know, Saul, what do you say, twice a month to start?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I see we have one. Lee has logged in. Okay. So we have one. We have one guest who logged in already, and we're going to put up our organization information in the description once this is uploaded to YouTube, and I'm going to try to also embed it on our website. It'll be available on our site as well. All the information about the organization will be in the description. And we have, we don't have an official framework or any kind of outline for the program yet. We're just going to basically start with production. We're going to have any discussions that have been brought up, any questions that have been submitted by email. And then we will go on to any attendees who would like to post questions in the chat box. Now, to start with, I do have a few messages that were sent to me. I don't know if you wanted to begin with any kind of topic to introduce. I have a few questions that were sent in. Some of them are pretty deep discussions, and I think for this introductory episode, we're not going to get into any of the more extensive discussions. I want to make this more of an introductory episode, and we will get into those things as we schedule. Do you have anything that you wanted to start with in terms of topics or anything? Anything recent, any news, any discussions that you had? Saul?
Yeah. I met an old friend yesterday from work, and he has become a Lubavitch fan. He's not a Lubavitcher, but he's become a Lubavitch fan. And I discussed with him for a few minutes the question of suffering. And it's so interesting that one gets typical responses like, God doesn't kill children, and you know, the kids who are dying in Africa, 10,000 a day, God doesn't kill them. And I say, you know, what kills them? Well, their leaders are not using the money to feed them. And I said that may be an interesting answer for today, but in the Bible it says that there was famine in the land. And there were no democratically elected leaders. There was a pharaoh. There were other despots, and there were no NGOs, and there was nobody to spread the food around. So look for answers from today and say, it's not God's fault, ignore the past. And then, you know, one by one, he would come up with other possible explanations. And finally, he said, we don't understand God's ways. And then I said, well, then why say he's good? If you don't understand his ways, you look at the world, you see terrible things happening all the time, and some wonderful things too. And it seems more likely he's not there at all, running the show. And he, you know, it's interesting how this guy is about 37 years old, and he's never thought about these questions. You can see from his answers that he's never thought about these things. Yeah, critically. He never thought about them critically. They all come back saying, we all understand God's ways.
The question.
The bottom. What?
Sorry. At that point, the question that arises to me is that, why is that acceptable as an answer? Not to suggest that it's necessarily incorrect, but saying you don't understand something isn't an answer. Question invites trying to understand. I think that the worst part about that is simply saying, I don't understand it, and I'm not supposed to. Not only I don't need to, but I'm not supposed to. In other words, I should not understand it, and that's okay. I don't know of any other aspect of the human experience where that's been not only acceptable, but even admirable. We always try to find answers. We don't always get answers. We don't always get complete answers. But we always try. We try to cure diseases. We never stop and accept to. Yeah, we have a comment from one of our guests who says, we don't need to, we're not supposed to. And I don't want to, and you shouldn't either. Which, in a sense, that's what this person's saying to you, because he hasn't always said that he doesn't understand it. He's also said that he doesn't want to, he doesn't need to, and he's suggesting that you shouldn't. And I think maybe not explicitly, but the fact that you're asking this and saying maybe there's an answer and we should seek it, this person is telling you should accept that it's something we don't need to understand and we shouldn't. Not to suggest that this is necessarily incorrect, but point to any other aspect of human experience where we do this. I've never seen it. We try to cure diseases. We try to improve life. You say people die of famine. Granted, not everybody in the world is putting as much effort as they should, but we do try to, develop hydroponics. We try to develop ways of bringing clean water and food to places where there aren't any. We don't generally accept that there's something. I mean, in any kind of criminal investigation, a trial, or any kind of investigation as to what happened in the past, we never say that we're not meant to have the answer. We shouldn't. We never say that it's better to remain ignorant about something. We may not get answers. Sometimes we may be content to know that we may never know. But we never aspire to not know or to not understand something. Yes, this gentleman suggested that it is a good thing to remain ignorant, stop trying to be a human being. And I think that really highlights it. Being a human being, one of the most fundamental parts of being a human being, unlike most other creatures or intelligent creatures, is that we look for answers. And to suggest that you shouldn't, again, I've never seen it. I've never seen behavior in any other aspect of life. I know that people
outside of religion.
That's correct. I don't know that we don't have answers to everything, and I know that the people who study the natural world or
police
investigating an accident that looks suspicious. They will look as hard as they can, and hopefully they will find out to as reasonable an extent as possible what actually occurred. If they don't, they will obviously always put in as much effort as they can, or that is practical. At some point they may not have an answer, but it is never an ambition to not have an answer. And as you pointed out, religion is something where people, and this is not always the case. A lot of religious scholars will tell you that they do want answers. Some may say they've found answers. But it's very common, particularly, like you suggested, somebody who's never examined their own religious beliefs critically. To them, this is, you know, who has time? You know, the person who has a job and a family and a social life doesn't necessarily have the time to investigate all these things, and they're not necessarily motivated because they've never been driven by the question, am I believing in true things or not? It is only when somebody decides for themselves, I only want to live by this if it's true. And I think a lot of us have gone through this at some point in our life for some reason, maybe arbitrarily or maybe instigated by some event or anything like that. We decided, I believe a lot of these things because I do, but should I? And that's not only a courageous thing, but it's also something that it has to occur to you to even question that. You and I both lived a lot of our life simply believing things that we never had a reason to question whether it's true or not, and it didn't harm us or anything. At some point, something inspired us to want to only know the truth and not to assume anything is true because it's simply what we were taught or the way we were raised. Somebody like the gentleman you were speaking to, it obviously is not important to him. I think this is a fundamental difference between ourselves and a lot of people who tell us that they know their beliefs are true and it's okay if they don't understand. It is not because they have a positive, active reason to believe in these things. It's simply because they do. They don't have any reason not to. Nothing ever inspired them to question it and want to know whether or not it's true. So,
yeah, a few things come to mind. One is that the very nature of the supreme being that most organized religions posit in order to explain our existence, the existence of the universe. The very nature of that supreme being is that he's unknowable, that he is so great and so infinite, so vast, that we can never really understand him. After all, you know, one of the functions of religion is to explain why there's a universe. And the universe is so vast and so complicated that any being that is capable of creating such a complex universe is assumed to be so far beyond our understanding that religious people allow themselves to say, I can't explain that, but that's to be expected. I'm just a little human being. And whoever created this universe is so much more intelligent, more vast, more powerful than I. So that's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is that if there is a creator who is vast and unintelligible to us, then in a way, you know, organized religion, Judaism, expects it explains that creator by saying that he wants us to apprehend that he exists. He wants us to appreciate that he exists, understand it, And you can't do that with some conception of him. So whether we can understand him fully or not, we have to have some conception of him. And like anything else, we are the consumer and the consumers. And if God wants us to apprehend that he exists and wants us to believe in the Torah, he has to present a case for himself that we can understand well enough to determine if we want to accept it and believe it. And if he has not presented an adequate case, he failed as a salesman for the idea that he exists. And if there's so many things we don't understand, there's so many reasons why we might reject him. Thirdly, and most importantly, I think, having an attitude like that, that we don't have to understand God, and he doesn't have to make sense to us, and his actions don't have to seem right to us, is such a dangerous and unacceptable way to go about things, because it allows anybody to posit the existence of any supernatural being and explain away his any behavior that doesn't make sense or that contradicts what we believe about him, explain it away by saying, well, we just don't understand. For example, in the Bible goes out of its way to inveigh against idol worship and says that these idols are powerless, that they don't exist, etc. And one of the greatest targets was a god who was believed in by many people 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, a god named Moloch. And Moloch, according to the Torah, required people to sacrifice their own children occasionally in order to satisfy his need for blood or sacrifice, human sacrifice or whatever, to appease him. And the Torah says that, and the Torah and rabbis say that such a god is an abomination because it's morally wrong to require you to sacrifice your own children. And in every Moloch temple, there used to be an idol, which is basically an oven, a furnace. And when you came in and you took your little baby and put him on a rack, and he got burned to a crisp. And if somebody would have asked the priest of Moloch, you know, God is supposed to love us. He created us. How can we be expected to sacrifice our own little children? It goes against all morality, and it goes against human instinct to kill your own children. That priest or rabbi of Moloch would say, well, there's some things about Moloch we don't understand because we're limited, we're only humans, and Moloch created everything. You can use that argument that we don't understand to justify anything, to justify the most corrupt and contradictory God. It cannot be an acceptable argument. If it is an acceptable way to behave, to accept things like that, to accept the death of 10,000 children every day in Africa for want of rain, and it's God's job to send rain, not mine or the fire department. If we're able to accept a God and call him good and accept that he kills 10,000 children a day, we should just as well be able to accept the God as good who wants us to sacrifice our kids. And yet the Bible tells us that we shouldn't accept such a God. And the Bible is also telling us, although we don't all realize it, the Bible is also telling us that we shouldn't accept the God that kills 10,000 innocent 4, 5, and 6-year-olds every day for want of rain. The Bible tells us not to accept that kind of God. It tells us how to determine whether a belief system is acceptable. And it says in the case of Moloch that it's not acceptable. And in the case of many other gods, that it's not acceptable. These gods are corrupt. They want corrupt worship, orgies, and human sacrifice, and we're not to accept them. By the Bible's own standards, we're not to accept a God who kills 10,000 children a day. So I think that the whole idea of saying that the bad things that God seems to do or tolerate or create the world with features that produce those bad things, I think the Bible is telling us we're not entitled to say we just don't understand, because that's a free-for-all. Once you do that, any kind of belief is okay, any kind of God is okay, and the Bible tells us any kind of God is not okay. The Bible tells us we have to believe in a God that the Bible talks about. But when the Bible tells us about God, it's a God who kills indiscriminately, who wants us to commit genocide, and who kills 10,000 kids a day, aside from all the kids who are dying of leukemia in the hospital. He's just not acceptable according to the Bible's own standards. He fails.
I think that a lot of people would be very surprised to hear what you're saying, because prepare for a shock. A lot of people from all sorts of religions have never even remotely thoroughly examined their own scripture. They are taught certain portions throughout their schooling, and they continue to live by a certain set of lifestyle activities, restrictions, guidelines, but have never thoroughly looked through their own scripture. The pieces that you're talking about, the kinds of deep ideas and the troublesome portions, are never taught to them, and it never occurs to them, I have an incomplete education in my own religion. That is a very, very common situation. One of our guests has posted a few comments about this. I think that one of the earlier comments is that anytime we want to understand something that we don't have a full understanding of, in science or society or anything, we inquire. And we can get answers, whereas in a case like this, I understand you've already had this kind of discussion with many very, very experienced scholars, and you've gotten the same answer from all of them, is that they don't have an answer for you. And the only, there's just one very specific condition that exists for some people and not for others, and that is that not acceptable to me. Some people it's okay. I suppose that for some people they don't really care. They are used to their lifestyle and it doesn't matter to them whether or not it's true. And I don't really think that, I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing, or I myself cannot understand or imagine what it's like to not care the things that you believe are true. But, I want to know as much accurate information as possible, and I want to know if I've ever thought something is true, and it is, really isn't. I want to know. But I think for a lot of people, this is really not the case, and I think that differentiates us. But that's a personal choice. I think our bigger concern is the fact that this is forced upon people from childhood, and a lot of people never get a chance to have the option of wanting to believe only truth or not. They are forced to conform and obey. There was actually recently, first of all, there's this, we were talking about what causes terrible things in the world. This is obviously not typical. Okay, I'm going to say that straight out. This is not typical, but the majority of religious community members, even rabbis, scholars, leaders, don't think like this. But there's every now and then this thing that pops up in the news. This Sephardi Haredi Kiruv rabbi named Yosef Mizrahi, and I didn't verify this story, but apparently it comes from a known statement, stated at some point that mixed dancing causes cancer and the deaths of children. Now, that's somebody who's saying that it does know why things happen. I don't know if anybody takes somebody like this seriously. I sincerely hope nobody does, but that takes it a step beyond. He stated that mixed dancing together between men and women, causes cancer and the deaths of children. Apparently, he's attributed these terrible things to this behavior. Were we completely devoid of any mixed dancing in society, there would be some, invariably some other behavior that this one individual disapproved of, that they would point to. This is not the first time we've heard a story like this. We've had the rabbi who said that women wearing too much makeup causes cancer, I think it was, a variety of other things. One of our guests wanted to have you introduce yourself. I don't think he knows you. This is somebody who I've gotten to know. And for your benefit, this is Saul Sheinfeld. He is my colleague, and he's also one of the directors of OMNIMS. We can make personal introductions at another time, I hope. You're welcome.
There
are some comments coming in from some of our attendees, and I'm really glad that people are able to attend. One or two things that I wanted to simply mention, you were talking about somebody deciding they wanted to want another truth. There is what I see as a prime example of the opposite, and something that I'm really finding it hard to come to terms with. I wasn't always somebody who was so critical of my beliefs and so deeply wanted to acquire as much truth as possible and understand the procedure as much truth as possible. But I don't, I've never to this level, I'll tell you what the person said. We were having a very long discussion. One of the gentlemen in our audience was part of this discussion, and there seemed to be, from my understanding, a back and forth in trying to understand what is true and what is not. It's not so existential like that. It was a specific topic that was introduced. It was related to the battles occurring right now in Israel between Gaza and other parts of Israel. There were some references cited, and at some point, this gentleman who seems to have demonstrated not only ignorance of a lot of subjects outside of Judaism, but an unwillingness to listen to a perspective that he's unfamiliar with and process it and think about it and consider it. After a few, he would pose a question like, "So why don't you explain this to me?" And this gentleman in the audience posted a link to a book. And the response was, "More books, LOL. In other words, you're giving me more information. What do I need with that? Don't make me laugh. I have all of the information I will ever need for the rest of my life." Without saying that so much, but certainly with respect to this specific issue, I tell you how I perceive something, I say, this is why I think this is the case, and you give me a book which explains it that I could potentially understand how I'm mistaken, and I just say, oh, why are you giving me books? I don't need that. This is a contentedness with ignorance. It's being happy, not having any better understanding of something. It's being happy that I can believe something and not have to worry about all of this information that conflicts with it. I want to mention that Boz comparison because I wanted to introduce it. This is a little something of my own creation. I don't know that it's necessarily accurate. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychiatrist or anything. This is based purely on my own experience, knowing and interacting with many, many people of all different levels of faith. And I think that in terms of how somebody, how, you know, blind faith is forced into someone's mind, call it indoctrination, I don't necessarily know, because there's sometimes there are people who later in life start to come to beliefs and accept them, and we could not bother going into all the motivations behind them. I'm sure there's a lot of different motivations, and they're not all necessarily nefarious, but if you have someone, even Richard Dawkins mentioned this kind of thing once. If you have somebody who, you know, believes something but is open to having a better or different understanding, you have somebody who believes and is happy in believing and it causes no trouble in their life and can appreciate interest in other topics that may conflict with their beliefs, that is, I think, perfectly human. But when a person openly states, and I am only assuming they're being earnest, because this is, after all, a fairly impersonal discussion that we had, that not only do I not understand, you know, such and such field of study, not only do I not know how to reconcile conflict with my beliefs, or even things that potentially could render my beliefs, you know, implausible. But I'm happy like this, not happy as in I like my lifestyle. I'm happy with the fact that I believe this and don't know any, you know, and don't understand, you know, how it's justified. I'm happy that this is what I know, and that to me it's true, and I'm happy I don't have to even care whether it is or not. I think that, you know, that vase story that I told you, if you take a vase and you crack it and a piece chips off or it splits into three pieces, you could potentially mend it with glue. And I think somebody who's open to discussion or reconsideration of their own beliefs is kind of like that. And that is essentially sort of how we were at one point. But if you smash a vase and destroy it, and you roll over it with a steamroller, and it is nothing but sand, you cannot repair that anymore. It theoretically it's possible, but it's practically it's impossible. And I think that possibly, this is the only way I perceive it. I perceive somebody with the attitude I was describing as being like that. No amount of persuasion, of information, of explanation, it will never get through. Because if a person is certain that they're right and that anything that seems to conflict with what they believe to be true doesn't matter, it's all irrelevant. You know, I don't know that there's anything that can possibly be done. And by the way, I don't really care. I specifically told this person online, I said, this is not to suggest I don't think you're a bad person. He actually seems to be a very kind person, but it's not about being a bad person. It's just, you know, you should not, you know, if you're going to engage in a discussion with somebody where you think that you, where you can assert that they're the one who's wrong, if you've demonstrated that you're completely closed to any, you know, to any new information, then you've locked yourself into your own reality. It's not necessarily, you know, if a person doesn't, and I said, as long as you don't do any harm to other people and you believe, you know, you treat other people with respect and with, you know, treat other people the way you want to be treated, I guess, then you know, this is not something that, that anybody has a right to change their mind. Certainly not forcibly, but there's no point. For some people, at some point, it's lost. It's a lost cause. I don't think that there's any point in trying to have a discussion at this time. And again, I don't know what it's like to be in that frame of mind, but when somebody engages a discussion with you, you know, you have to make the assumption that they're open to, you know, receiving new ideas and processing them and considering them. And if they're not, it's closed. It's a closed case. Whether somebody like that will ever have their own reason to suddenly decide they want to investigate the beliefs is another story. I don't really know. Hold on a minute. We have a comment here. The initial Ten Commandments, slavery. I think what he means to suggest is that you don't see slavery being one of the Ten Commandments, like do not own other people. This is related to morality, and I definitely want to get into that whole discussion in another conference.
If I may respond, there are different kinds of people in the world. There are people who, upon hearing that we live in a galaxy, Milky Way galaxy, that has 150 billion stars, and our star, the Sun, is just one of 150 or 200 billion stars, and has some planets around it, and many or most of the other stars may have planets around them, and that galaxy is only one out of 200 or 150 billion galaxies, each of which also has, you know, 150 billion some odd stars in it. There are some people when they hear that, they say, what do I care about that? I'm here, I go to work, I have a family, I have kids, they have birthday parties. What do I care what's going on out there in the vast universe? And there are other people, and Carl Sagan is one of the best examples, who looks out in his telescope and discovers that is what's out there, and who's endlessly intrigued by it and wants to know everything he can about it. And you can apply that to cosmology, as I just did, or you can apply it to medicine. There are some people, when they're feeling ill, they go to the doctor, and they say, write me a prescription and tell me what tests I need. And when they come home from the doctor, if you ask them what's wrong with them, they have no idea. They never bothered asking the doctor. The doctor will take care of it, and that's all. I'm not a doctor. I'm not interested in physiology and anything. There are people who are inquisitive. There are people who want to know how everything works, why everything is the way it is, why the weather changes the way it does, what's happening with global warming, what's happening out there with all those galaxies, and what's happening inside the body that causes cancer. There are the people who just want to go to work and make a living and feed their families and go on vacation, and they're just not interested at all in the grander issues. It's probably partly genetic, partly their environment, how they were brought up, whether they were brought up to think about things or just take things as they are and try to live. And partly it's I don't know, there are lots of factors, I think, that go into whether you're one kind of person or the other kind of person or someone in between who has some interest and has a very low tolerance for detail and boredom, very quick boredom. So there are different kinds of people, and the same thing applies in the case of religion. There's some people, you know, they grow up and their parents and their teachers tell them that there's a God and here's the Bible and this is how it all happened, and they say, that's fine with me, and they coast the rest of their lives with those beliefs. And most of those beliefs, upon closer scrutiny, turn out to be incorrect or questionable. And they don't want to know about it because they're just not that kind of person who's interested in truth and reality and inquiry. They want to have a simple life and go about their more mundane functions of living and breathing and eating and having relationships, etc. So that's one explanation for it. It's a different type of person. I'll just make one comment more, and that is about having faith in what you were taught. Having faith in what you were taught can be demonstrated to be a very dumb thing to do. It can be demonstrated very easily without any kind of proof beyond the thought experiment. There are right now about 1.5 billion people who have faith in Jesus, because they were taught that Jesus is their Savior, Jesus is the Mashiach, and if you believe in Jesus, you go to heaven. About 1.5 billion people. We who were brought up Jewish believe that's wrong, or know that's wrong, depending on the individual. And here there are 1.5 billion people who believe with Emunah Shelema that it's true. Same thing is true with Islam. There are about close to 2 billion people in the world who are taught at a young age, generally, that Allah is God and Muhammad is his messenger. And they believe that with Emunah Shelema. Some of them, to the extent, their Emunah Shelema is so full that they're willing to sacrifice their lives to crash airplanes into buildings if they believe this is what Allah wants. Well, my point is, there are about 1,000 religions that exist in the world or have existed that are known, major religions, and most adherents of those religions believe with Emunah Shelema that their religion is correct. And they're all wrong, because some of these religions contradict each other, are incompatible with each other. So billions of people have utter faith in false things. So if you have utter faith in something without evidence, that's a pretty dumb thing to do, in view of the fact that obviously billions of people have blind faith or utter faith in things that are wrong. And and to think that somehow your parents, your grandparents got it right when they taught you this blind faith, and everybody else's grandparents got it wrong, is very arrogant and not thoughtful. And unless you can show some evidence, some good evidence, that you've got it right and everybody's blind faith is wrong, then the only reasonable conclusion is that blind faith is not a path to attain truth, because blind faith leads Christians to Jesus and leads Muslims to Muhammad and Allah, and it leads Hindus to all the Hindu gods, etc. So blind faith may be a nice tool to get you to have a comfortable and happy life, but it ain't a useful tool in determining what's true. And yeah, it should never be used. It should be used in any religion, because we can see by my example that it's useless and valueless in determining truth. That can't be the source of truth.
Right. And I appreciate that. Thank you. One of the things I wanted to mention about that is, where does this become important? You know, the argument can be said, as we've heard so many times, but it makes people happy. Why do you care? Okay. I was like one of the attendees just said, incorrect belief and a worldview based on the Bible doesn't help you or me when they go into the voting booth to vote on public policy that affects me. And that's a small example of a larger issue. I don't really care, and I don't think anybody can make a case for caring about what goes on inside someone's own mind if that's where it stays. But that's never where it stays, or almost never, okay? Because those beliefs are the motivation for behavior and for action and for decision-making, whether it's for themselves, for their children, for their family, for their friends, or, as this person said, for voting on public policy. we don't have to give the examples of all these ridiculous bills that are being pushed through, many that we don't even hear about because they never make it, but politicians actually attempting to make laws, such as one that I recently read about, that a woman who is divorced, I think it was, should have to get approval from the government to start dating. I mean, yes, this is laughable, but there was a, it was either a senator or a congressman who attempted, who put this in as a bill, and that's not a joke. They're attempting to make something a law. These things don't exist in a bubble. I don't know if it can. If you believe something that doesn't really matter to you, you were saying, you know, I don't really need to know that what's in the universe. I care about my life. I want to be happy, take my kids to the ball game. But if you have a set of beliefs that dictate that certain things are prohibited, certain things are mandatory, then you affect other people. And that's where it becomes important to know the truth. Because you may say that the people who play into the buildings are just crazy fundamentalists, but they were following in their own way. You have to attempt to convert infidels, and if you can't, you are commanded to annihilate them. Okay? They were being, they were in our terminology, they were doing the highest mitzvah. Okay? You can't, and if it's something as simple as a lot of people are controversial about Bris Milah, there are so many things to talk about, okay, among the Hasidim, the way they treat women. We could go into a lot of examples, and I sure hope we will in future episodes, but a set of beliefs as vast as biblical commandments and then all of the rabbinic interpretations and new commandments and rabbinic mandates and statutes and all kinds of things that they've added over the centuries, you're now living in a giant framework of rules and regulations, of mandatory actions, of restrictions, of controlled behavior and compliance that affects other human beings who don't share the same belief. And then you are forcing your beliefs, your blind faith, to harm others. And that's where it becomes a real, real problem. And the old question of why do you care what someone believes if they don't, it makes them happy. Because it just doesn't stay there. It can. I think in the case of very progressive, modern religious people, they always put humanistic values above those rules because they just know it's right. They don't talk about it. They don't then go and question their beliefs and say, well, why do I know better than my scripture? Why is my morality better? They just accept it, but they still live by the lifestyle, and that's okay. But that's very, very rare in the grand scheme of things, in terms of statistics. The other gentleman is saying we live in a super apologetic world where rabbis, ministers, imams are looking to get a leg up on each other and their congregants. It's the grand money. It is definitely motivated by money in a lot of cases. It's not always the case. I know a lot of rabbis who are practically impoverished, but we're not going to talk about the motivation, for the leadership right now. We're just talking about from an individual standpoint, like the person you mentioned, person who's got a job and a family and a social life and likes to, just live his life according to this. It rarely, eventually, a rule or a fundamental commandment that they feel bound by is going to rear its ugly head and is going to affect other people. And that's when the question, is it really truth or not, becomes important. Because if something's true, it's best to live by it. If not, then your blind faith that just makes you happy has now harmed another human being. And that's criminal, quite frankly. It is a criminal concept. Right.
May I make a comment on one of the comments that were submitted on chat? That thing you put off for a different conference about the Kuzari argument. It is a large enough topic to spend an entire to spend an entire session on. But I will say that I've discussed the Kuzari argument, and I've written papers on the Kuzari argument. I've discussed it with Rabbi David Gottlieb over a 3-month period, and he's one of the foremost proponents of it in writing. And the argument is totally ridiculous, invalid, based on lies and misunderstanding, and has no merit whatsoever, and I can demonstrate that. And hopefully one day we can talk about that. But it's a specious argument. It's done, it's given by people who are ignorant or who are very crafty and try to pull the wool over others' eyes. It is a total failure as an argument. I just wanted to get that in. And I, as Daniel said, I have had discussions with between 100 and 200 rabbis. That's why I have gray hair. I'm really only 27. but I have had discussions.
Yes, he's my nephew.
I've had discussions with between 100 and 200 Orthodox rabbis, and they're basically full of it. They're either ignorant. Sometimes they walk away from our discussion scratching their head. Some of those rabbis are very, very bright people. I have never lost a debate or an argument with a rabbi or anybody else, for that matter, about religion. I've lost debates on other matters, other topics in which I may not have the expertise that the other person has. But on religion, I've never lost a debate with any rabbi. And they believe because they want to believe. And when you ask them questions about God's goodness, you see a tremendous effort to whitewash God. God is good, end of the story. And when you point out things he does that are not good, they come up with the most absurd and inane explanation. One guy, a rabbi in Israel, whom I asked, why did God cause the earthquake in Haiti that killed 230,000 people and created about 30 or 40,000 orphans overnight who lost their mothers and fathers. And his answer was, anyone who is stupid enough to build their home on a fault line deserves what he gets. Now, Haiti was populated a long, long time ago before anybody knew what a fault line was. Before there was any study in seismic events and geologists who could explain these things, but this person was perfectly content to blame the victims of earthquakes and say they shouldn't have built their home on fault lines. And just an insane answer.
Did you point out to him that those holes, you know, civilizations, or the entire society that lives there came out of a people that had no idea about these things? Did you pose that to him? Did you ask him about what you just said? That how can you blame people who had no idea what a fault line is?
I asked him, and he just slithered away. Another rabbi for whom I have great respect because he's otherwise very intelligent, when I asked him why God created an animal kingdom with peaceful animals like lambs who eat grass and other vegetables, vegetation, and then put lions and hyenas and jackals in the same place, and made them carnivores, knowing that the only thing they could eat was other animals, and then watched them proceed to rip apart, rip to shreds the lamb and any other animal, causing tremendous pain, and his infinite kindness gave those prey animals nervous systems so they could experience the full terror of having a lion run after them and experience the full pain of being ripped to shreds. And this rabbi, who knows physics and who's an intelligent man, said to me, How do you know that animals suffer pain when they're being ripped apart? And I wanted to pick up a stick and hit him and say, and I said to him, if I pick up a stick and I hit you and you start crying, how do I know that you're really suffering pain? And what do you think all those veterinarians are doing, giving animals morphine, dying animals morphine and other painkillers? You know, are you crazy? I basically asked him, and he was the rabbi of my shul, I basically asked him, are you out of your mind? And he just laughed. Well, when you can get an answer like, how do you know animals suffer pain? With all the studies that have been done on animals and pain, and there are thousands of studies, if you can answer that question by saying, how do you know they suffer pain? And by an intelligent rabbi, I could see a buffoon. It shows that everybody is anxious to protect their beliefs and to whitewash God and say, God would never do such a terrible thing. So there must be some simple explanation, like people brought it on themselves by building their homes on fault lines, or animals don't suffer pain. You get the most ridiculous things that show how desperate religious people are to defend their erroneous beliefs.
Yeah. I only want to mention with regard to that, some of our audience here are posting questions, you know, that saying, how do you know animals suffer? It's the same thing as saying, we could say to them, how do you know that there's an invisible magical creator? You know, it's a question of what is more likely, there is or there is not. And what is more likely, that the animal is whimpering and rolls over and starts moaning? and it goes beyond that. Just observation. It comes to the point of measurement. They can measure animals' pain the same way they can measure pain in people to a certain extent. You're not always able to, but with MRIs and with brain scans, you can measure activity that indicates pain. It's by no means perfect yet. Is it a question of what's more reasonable to do? Assuming you know neither and you observe, do you think that an animal that has just been attacked and starts moaning, which is not behavior you ever see that animal exhibit in other situations, this is all of a sudden that he's decided to start doing this, and that there's no, that, you know, and we can see that their physiology is similar to us. We can see that they have nerves and a spinal cord, and yet you're just going to say, what is more reasonable, that this animal is not experiencing pain or that it is? And you know, under any circumstances, a reasonable conclusion is usually the one all people will always agree with. And yet when it causes them a theological problem, they will just throw it out the window. And that's a problem because, you know, then they're just shutting off their critical thinking. They're shutting off, temporarily disabling their common sense because it's threatening, you know, their theology. I've posed this question many a time, and you get familiar with it, where, you know, the person will defend that belief by saying, you know, the good things that happen, they attribute to them as actively helping us, and the bad things that happen, or the things that we perceive as bad, as having no positive benefit. Is just something we're not meant to understand, but he's ultimately good. We just don't understand. And, a nice thinking experiment, which is what we do very frequently, and you get familiar with this one, is consider two possible realities. One where that's the truth, and one where, yeah, he exists and he's a sadistic maniac and loves to inflict pain, and anything that good that happens to us is just our inability to perceive his real, his you know, truer motive, you know, the higher plan. Okay, we cannot differentiate between those two realities. So they're identical, and all you're doing is making interpretations. You can just be this nefarious, evil, sadistic torturer, and that all of the bad things that are so obvious in the world, diseases and famine and disasters and evil, are all obvious, blatant examples of his torturous work. And anything good that happens to him just happened to somebody, fortunate. It's just not us not really understanding how that fits into his bigger plan. You cannot differentiate between these two realities. Obviously, one is more pleasant than the other, but the fact that there's no way to know should give you a reason to wonder whether or not any of it's even true to begin with. Because you're just seeing what you want to see, and without evidence, you're basically bordering on complete fiction here. Which obviously I believe it is fiction, but we're not going to get into that. One of our attendees says this is how religion evolved to become as unfalsifiable as possible. That's the only way it's been able to survive. It is falsifiable in some cases. Prayer studies, very few have been done, but some have been done just in the attempt to, you know, just for the sake of, I guess, maybe for laughs or for the sake of entertaining for a moment and putting it to the test. A couple of prayer studies have been done, and they have demonstrated without a doubt that prayer has absolutely no effect whatsoever. Coincidentally, in one case, a prayer happened to have made somebody get worse, but they don't take that seriously because they know that this is just random. If prayer has no effect, and therefore they don't attribute it, you know, as a cause and effect relationship. But some things are falsifiable. But again, he's suggesting that it is evolving. So more and more explanations are given and changing of interpretations so as to never be able to disprove. I realize that's the case, and you're right. This is one of the gentlemen who's in the audience. Religion is in a constant state of apology, obviously. and I think that we have a lot of great topics to continue on, and I appreciate the people who attended, and I also appreciate some of the emails that I've gotten, and I touched on some of those subjects. Please keep it coming, and I will post on the description all of our information. The organization is OnlyMS, and we're really just starting, so you're not going to find a wealth of content on our site, but we have an established mission statement and a description of what our operations entail. And I will definitely put announcements in Facebook groups and on Reddit and our website when we're going to have our next conference. And please definitely email any questions if you can't attend and let us know what you want to hear us talk about. We would be very happy to. And thank you to our audience members. Paul, anything you'd like to?
Yeah, I have two thoughts. I think that Daniel and I would both appreciate comments on today's short first program, whether technical comments, were you able to hear us clearly, is our system working well, and any comments on things we said or our style, or anything that would be useful to us. In the future. And I just want to address one comment that I saw that came in about a rabbi. I had debates with Rabbi, and I posted a rebuttal on his website showing that something he said in one of his tapes was wrong. And he sent me a series of text messages in which he said that if I ever do that again, he will get his 100 or 200,000 or 300,000 followers. And he knows my address, and he will have them come after me and destroy my life, make my life miserable. This is for posting a comment saying that that his argument was misleading and not intelligent, and that he refused to take down a video a YouTube video in which he said things were wrong, demonstrably wrong. And he said he was going to attack me and have his followers attack me. So you can see what the quality of that person is. Any comments? I don't want to get into mudslinging against a particular person, but if it's the same that I know, one wonders what kind of rabbi he is to be able to make such threats.
Yeah,
please do send in comments.
Yeah,
please do send in comments. I'm really nasty if you question the public, especially when they make a living doing this.
Yeah. Along those lines, we don't have a studio, and we are doing it in a very convenient for us at the moment and affordable manner. So we're using a web conference site that records for us, and please be patient while we at least refine this system so that it's comfortable, everybody can be heard and seen very easily. I do think that it's going to work well for us, you know, in the short term. Thank you. Let us know if our voice could be improved, if the volume was done well. We're kind of starting this from scratch, and but the main goal is to get the discussions out there and to get the information out there and to encourage participation. So for now, that's really what we're shooting for. It may be a less formal than a lot of shows, but we're trying to get our core goals active at least. So again, the organization is only Emma and Dan Fowler, and this is Paul Kleinfeld, and we hope to see you our next presentation, and we're definitely going to make announcements wherever we can. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for attending.
Thank you.